morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 18, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Sierra Leone President Koroma is granted medical bail to travel to Nigeria.
The former president's lawyers made an application, and they specifically requested that he be allowed to travel to the Federal Republic of Nigeria so that he can attend to his medical needs.
Africa's humanitarian crises are underreported amid conflicts in Europe and the Middle East. Rights group called for the U.S. to designate Nigeria for religious freedom violations. A woman is the elected president pro tempore of the Liberian Senate, but activists demand more female representation. A joint Uganda opposition group plans a peaceful protest today, Thursday, ahead of tomorrow's Non-Aligned Movement Summit in Kampala.
The purpose of the protest is to demand for the 18 missing people that were abducted and taken away by security never to be seen again.
And some crucial games are scheduled for today at the 2024 African Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone's information minister has confirmed that a court has granted permission for former President Ernest Bai Koroma to travel to Nigeria for medical reasons. Koroma is facing charges of treason and other offenses for his role in an alleged coup attempt last November. He has denied the accusations. Information Minister Chernon Bar would not say whether the medical trip was requested by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. He tells me the decision is consistent with the laws of Sierra Leone.
The former president's lawyers made an application for a modification of his bail terms, and they specifically requested that he be allowed to travel to the Federal Republic of Nigeria so that he can attend to his medical needs. They presented evidence of this in court. There was a debate between his lawyers and the lawyers of the government of Sierra Leone, and the court made a judgment that allowed for the modifications of the bail conditions and for the former president to be allowed to travel to Nigeria.
Is this usual, Minister?
It is definitely consistent with the rule of law that lawyers can apply for a leave to allow their client to travel to attend to desperate medical needs. In this case, the former president lawyers have made a case that convinced the court. It's also important to point out that there are other conditions. So those conditions include that they will be consistently reporting back to the court on his medical situation and that they have a return date. The lower court did adjourn the case when the lawyers of the government of Sierra Leone will be back in court. So whatever happens in between that, you know, this is now part of, you know, as far as we know, the case is still on and this is consistent with the laws of our country.
I asked the question because I think it was just 2 weeks ago that we talked about the former president going to Nigeria at the request of ECOWAS. Is this the same or this is different?
This is certainly different. As I said, this is a product of the court proceedings in Sierra Leone. They made an application that the court has granted. And again, the application is very clear. They are seeking for their clients to be allowed to seek medical attention in court. I think what we want to make clear, James, is that Sierra Leone is a country of laws. We abide by the rule of law, and that's the position that the government of Sierra Leone has had from the first day of this investigation and the incident of November 26th. And today's ruling is simply consistent with that.
So ECOWAS had nothing to do with this?
Well, again, I will not speculate on what ECOWAS had something to do with or not, but what I can say is that the courts of Sierra Leone, the judiciary of Sierra Leone in front of our Justice Samuel Taylor, did receive an application that was consistent with the rules of our country, that was very clear in terms of the medical condition of the former president, Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma, and that request was granted.
Because this is unusual. So if one of the people charged with treason, if they request to the court, if they put in a request to the court, would the court also grant that?
James, as you know, I cannot speculate on what the court can or cannot do, but what I can tell you is that this is consistent with the rule of law of Sierra Leone.
What's the time span for the president's trip? What did the court say in terms of how long he should stay?
As I said, that the matter has been adjourned to the first week of March. So we're expecting that the former president's lawyers, at the very least, will be back in court on the date of the case. And whatever happens in between that now is different. But what we know for now, the judgment of the court is that, A, he is granted bail to leave the country, and that the matter is adjourned. So the case is still on.
Joined by Sierra Leone's Information Minister, he was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Human rights organizations, including religious groups, are calling on the U.S. government to designate Nigeria as a country of concern for religious freedom. The calls follow a spate of attacks on Christmas Eve in central Nigeria that killed nearly 200 people, but critics say previous designations by the U.S. did not resolve tensions between Nigeria's Muslim and Christian communities. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The latest push to designate Africa's largest country over religious freedom violations comes after U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced a plan this month to designate other countries, including Iran and Russia, for alleged violations. The petitioners, some 20 organizations, including Advancing American Freedom, Alliance Defending Freedom, and the Hudson Institute, signed a notice this week asking U.S. authorities to include Nigeria on the list. This comes in the wake of brutal Christmas Eve attacks in predominantly Christian communities in central Nigeria. Armed gangs in large numbers attacked residents of Barkin Ladi and Bokkos districts in Plateau State, killing and burning down houses. Authorities say 195 people were killed and hundreds more were injured from the attacks. The petitioners also cited a report by the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law that found more than 52,000 Christians were killed in Nigeria's north in the last 14 years. But critics say previous U.S. labeling of Nigeria as a country of concern did not yield any results. Lakin Akintola is the director of Muslim Rights Concern, or MURIC.
We don't consider anything the United States does these days as important. The U.S. has disappointed the world. Whether the U.S. wants to designate Nigeria as a terrorist country, or a fundamentalist one, or a non-democratic one, we don't care.
In 2019, the U.S. placed Nigeria in its watch list for religious freedom violations, and the following year designated the country over religious killings in the north. In theory, the designation could have economic implications for the country, including loan denials and higher barriers to exports and trade. But the spokesperson of the Christian Association of Nigeria, or CAN, says Plateau attacks were not necessarily religious in nature.
The Plateau crisis is a cocktail of ethnic, religious, and socioeconomic factors. There are hostilities between the Christian and the Muslim communities in Plateau. But the kinds of attacks and abductions we are seeing this time around, it doesn't seem to have much of that religious coloration. The coloration of these attacks seem to have become something more of there's a problem in the country.
Jan Namike says what is more important is for Nigerian authorities to prioritize security of all citizens, regardless of religion or ethnicity.
Let security be improved. Let the citizens feel secured, irrespective of their background, their religious affiliation, their location. The issue is not whether Nigeria is on the list or not. The issue has to do with improving security and then ensuring that governance.
According to Pew Research, Nigeria has the largest Christian population of any country in Africa, more than 80 million. Human rights groups will be watching to see how things unfold in the future. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
In Liberia, a woman has been elected president pro tempore of the 55th legislature. Nyombli Kanga Lawrence of the Liberty Party and a supporter of President-elect Joseph Boakai won a white ballot in a Senate comprising 27 men and 3 women. Rita Jilobe Duo has details from Monrovia.
Liberian women have been expressing surprise by Senator Kanga Lawrence's victory as the Senate pro tempore, especially in a body comprising 27 men and 3 women. Senator Kanga Lawrence referred to female underrepresentation in politics during her acceptance speech.
It is common knowledge that politics in Liberia has very silently become a no-zone for many Liberian women out of fear of being bullied, maliciously slandered, and intimidated. As a woman, I am much honored to be the first among equals in a male-dominated Senate of 27 powerful, influential, and experienced men.
She expressed optimism that her achievement will motivate more women to take up the challenge of bridging the gender gap in Liberian politics.
It is my fervent hope that women of Liberia are inspired by this accomplishment and step to the occasion as we collectively endeavor to increase the presence of women in the national legislature.
Gender inequality continues to be a major concern in Liberian politics. Of the 88 contested seats for the legislature in the 2023 presidential and legislative elections, only 6 female candidates were elected to the House of Representatives and 1 to the Senate. Fasia Harris, a member of the Liberian Feminist Forum, says the outcome of the polls was extremely disappointing.
It was a bit of mixed feeling for us, given the level of work that the women of Liberia have invested in women's political participation in closing the gender gap in leadership. Howbeit, the elections of Madam Yumbi Kaka Lawrence reassures us and gave us an opportunity for further engagement and to be able to continue to make the case for women's political participation.
Harris wants President-elect Joseph Boakai to consider appointing women in key leadership roles in his administration.
We challenge the incoming government to be able to prioritize the issue of gender equity and gender equality in apportioning different leadership roles to citizens through the appointment power that they have, that we need a political will. Women political participation does not end during election season. It goes beyond that period. So we look forward to see a very gender-sensitive government.
Meanwhile, the Women's NGO Secretariat of Liberia, through its executive director, Esther Nyango, has called on Senate Pro Tem Kanga Lawrence to use her office to prioritize women's issues in the Senate.
We are hopeful that she, being a Senate Pro Tem, she will be able to prioritize women issues, she will be able to convince her colleagues to ensure that the women issues are brought to the table for discussion.
Senator Nyombli Kanga Lawrence is the second female president pro tempore of the Liberian Senate after Grace Manning, who served as the first female president pro tempore from 2022 to 2023. For VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Rita Jrobeduo in Monrovia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 18. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A joint opposition group in Uganda has called for a peaceful protest today, Thursday, to raise awareness about what they call poor roads in Uganda. This as Uganda hosts the Non-Aligned Movement Summit tomorrow, Friday. The police say the protest is intended to tarnish the country's image and will not allow the demonstration. The Uganda Monitor newspaper quotes police spokesperson Fred Enanga as saying opposition protests have never been peaceful. Opposition leader Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobby Wine, rejects the allegation. He tells me the protesters will also demand the whereabouts of allegedly missing opposition supporters.
The purpose of the protest is to demand for the 18 missing people that were abducted and taken away by security never to be seen again.
These are the supporters of your party?
Yes, please.
The opposition has been protesting or boycotting parliament because of this. Ugandan officials are saying that they don't know whether they are holding any of your supporters because they don't have information on that.
But they were taken in live view of camera. General Museveni, the president, went about them and conceded that he has them. The country came out loudly and confessed that she has them. This was months ago.
So let's talk about the protest. The police are saying they are not going to allow you to protest because your protests have never been peaceful.
But we've never been violent. We've never been violent. Our protests are always peaceful. We have never been violent in our protests, and we intend to be non-violent even this time around. You know, violence only comes when the police cracks down on the people, beats them and arrests them and tortures them, not the people themselves.
As you know, Honorable, the Noi Line Summit is taking place on Friday. The government is saying you are protesting or you want to protest to tarnish the image of Uganda.
No, we want to protest the gross human rights situation in Uganda that is happening. What tarnishes the government is what they do, gross human rights violations. What we highlight the situation, we only expose the atrocities. They know that what they're doing is a violation of the norms that established the non-aligned movement, and they're not respecting the principles that bring them together.
Are you saying, therefore, you are going to protest? Do you have permission from the police to do so?
Yes.
Opposition leader Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, he was speaking with us from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In a new report, CARE International says events in Africa are being underreported in the media as global attention shifts to conflicts in Europe and the Middle East. The charity group identifies 10 African nations confronting humanitarian challenges from hunger, violence, and climate change, but getting little news coverage. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Report released last week took the unusual approach of aggregating online articles in Arabic, English, French, German and Spanish. It found there were more than 215,000 articles last year about Prince Harry's book Spare, but only 11,000 about the deadly violence and displacement in Burkina Faso. There were more than 273,000 articles about the Barbie film, but only 1,000 about the floods, drought and hunger in Angola that affected some 7 million people. The report titled Breaking the Silence mentions many other African crises that are getting little to no media attention. Stefan Brand works with CARE Germany. He explains why the continent's humanitarian crisis is underreported.
I think that big crises, big conflicts such as the war in Ukraine or now in the Middle East are receiving the most coverage by international journalists in every country or most of the countries, and therefore smaller crises are more in the shadow of these big conflicts. But I also think that media channels are more forced to save money because of the lack of interest by public.
CARE International's research singled out 10 African countries, including Zimbabwe, Uganda, Burundi, Zambia and Senegal, that are suffering crises such as climate change, conflict, poverty, widespread hunger and political instability. It said more than 77,000 articles were published last year about these countries, while the iPhone 15 generated more than 273,000 stories. Douglas Okwach is the secretary of the Foreign Press Association Africa, an organization of African journalists working for foreign media. He says media budgets have been shrinking, reducing the number of stories being produced from the continent.
I think post-COVID countries globally really are constrained in terms of resources, you know. And then therefore, many countries, particularly the ones that own this big international media, are looking at where to cut, you know, budgets. And probably the media is one of the places or the easiest places to cut budgets. And when you cut budgets, then that have a direct implication on coverage.
International media's closure of foreign bureaus also is blamed for the underreporting and fatigue that has set in after decades of unending conflicts and humanitarian crisis in some African countries. Some critics have accused foreign media of focusing more on Africa's conflict and suffering than its potential and contribution to the world. Okwach, who is also a journalist, says other sectors and global competition for Africa's resources and support are getting more coverage than the humanitarian crisis.
Cannot just focus on the humanitarian, the fewer, the lesser humanitarian stories, and think that things in Africa are on a downward spiral in terms of focus on Africa. I think if there's less coverage on humanitarian crisis, probably the coverage has also shifted towards economic interests and geopolitical interests.
Brand says access to African countries and investment in stable media can improve coverage in Africa. The United Nations says more than 300 million people will need humanitarian assistance in 2024, but half of them in Africa. CARE International calls for the media to tell African humanitarian crisis stories so aid agencies and relevant authorities can take urgent action to save the situation. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
The first round of the 2024 African Cup of Nations continues today, Thursday, in Ivory Coast, with some key games on the schedule. Host country Ivory Coast will take on Nigeria, while Egypt will play Ghana, which lost its first game. Joining us now from Abidjan is VOA's Mokbil Yabaro. Good morning to you, Mokbil, and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Good morning. Thank you so much, James.
You are where I would like to be, Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. Bring us to up to date about the African Cup of Nations. What's happening?
Yeah, James, it's been a great, great tournament already. Yesterday, the games that were played were Morocco versus Tanzania. Morocco ended up winning 3-0. Tanzania tried, but, you know, Morocco is of that quality that they showed in the World Cup, and they seem to still be on form. And then the second game of the day was DRC versus Zambia, two very closely matched teams that ended up in a 1-1 draw. So in that team at the moment, Morocco is at the top, and then the split happened between Zambia and DRC, and Tanzania is at the bottom of the group.
What's happening today, Thursday?
So the games that will be played today will be Nigeria, Ivory Coast, as well as Egypt and Ghana. And lastly, there will be also Cape Verde and Mozambique. So those will be the three games that will be played today.
Just listening to you, I can expect that Ghana versus Egypt will be a very exciting game.
Ooh, James, Ghana, you know, lost to Cape Verde in their opening match 2-1. So because of that, this is somewhat of a must win for them, or at least don't lose and get a draw. But because of that initial loss to Cape Verde, a win would be substantial for them in this situation. Egypt also, though, drew 2-2 to Mozambique. And because of that, they also want to kind of create that dominance in this group and get that win so they can get on top of the group.
So this is the group stage of the tournament?
Yes, sir, it is.
Who advances from each group?
So each group will have two teams that will advance. Now, it all depends on the landscape of that specific group. So there could be one group, for instance, that just doesn't lose any points and is able to pick up 3 points in all three of their matches. With 9 points, they comfortably cruise on. But then there'll be other groups that we will see, because there have been a plethora of teams that have drawn that may end up leading a group with maybe one win and two draws, if that is kind of how it plays out. So it just kind of just depends on the layout of a specific group.
Mokbil, before I let you go, talk to me about the fans. For me, that's one of the things I like to go and see these games, the fans.
Absolutely, James. I will say this, and I've said this since I've come here. The fanfare has been absolutely insane. The Ivorians have really shown us that, you know, they are one of the greatest nations to host an African Cup of Nations. They're supporting not only their team, but sometimes, you know, you may have some teams that don't really have a ton of support, and they're here to support them as well, so that teams don't feel as though they don't have anybody on the ground rooting for them.
Mokbil, thank you very much again. We look forward to speaking with you again the next day.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, James.
That's Mokbil Yabaro at the African Cup of Nations in the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. And that's it for this Thursday, January 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.
Substance abuse, including alcohol and illicit drugs, negatively impact those who abuse them, their families and society, often with serious health and financial consequences. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will discuss women surviving alcoholism and substance abuse. We will also hear from women and medical specialists. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at